Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey, and this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case I have for you today is about a man who thought he was going to have a normal workday. That's when two people walked into the service station and saw him dazed and confused. 29 days later, he passed away. This is the case of Eddie Brown. Dewey Edward Brown, better known as Eddie, was born on November 9th, 1919, to John and Ethel Brown. He lived in the small community of Kincaid, West Virginia. In 1978, after spending a lot of his life working for the railroad, he decided he wanted a little change in his life and started to work at a small service station along West Virginia Route 61. He quickly gained a local reputation as a gentle giant. Eddie was nearly 6 foot tall and weighed around 220 pounds. He was known by a lot of people to have a heart that matched. The local children always knew that they could count on him to slip them some free candy while they waited on their school bus. Adults knew that if they were low on cash, he would always be more than willing to help them out. In the months and weeks leading up to Eddie's murder, crime had risen in the area. From what I could see, it was mostly burglaries and drug activity, which this prompted law enforcement to increase their patrol. Around this time, a group of juveniles had taken up residence near Eddie's home. From what I can tell, most of the trouble in the area was coming from this group. Not too long before the assault of Eddie, the leader of this group was arrested and things seemed to somewhat settle down.
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies to unexplained deaths and disappearances to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right, well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
In January of 1992, Eddie lived with his youngest sister, Ola, in the Brown family home at the end of Camp Branch Road, around 1.5 miles away from the Sunoco station where he worked. Eddie didn't own a car, and he would often walk to the station each morning. Although the Sunoco station he worked at did not open until 6 a.m., he would always open at 4 a.m. He would typically leave his home around 2 a.m. each morning. Sometimes he would catch a ride with Richard and Clarine Marshall, who delivered newspapers in the area. The morning of January 22, 1992 started as any other day for Eddie. His sister Ola prepared breakfast for him. After breakfast, he put on a sweatshirt and a jacket, each with a hood and a baseball cap. He left his home approximately at 2 a.m. His sister later stated that she thought she heard lowered voices not too long after Eddie departed. Neighbors recalled that about this time, several dogs in the neighborhood started barking. However, few paid the barking any mind. The surrounding area was desolate. You have homes along the roadway between Eddie's house and the service station. Traffic was usually light at that time of morning, but it's not uncommon for there to be a few vehicles. 40 minutes after leaving his home, a driver passing by who knew Eddie and his route drove by the service station on his way home. He saw Eddie at the front door. It looked like he was in the process of unlocking it. Eddie looked up and made eye contact with the man driving by. The driver said that he seemed distant and surprised. He said that he drove on thinking that the appearance of his headlights may have simply startled Eddie. At approximately 4 a.m., Richard and Clarine Marshall drove by the service station after finishing their paper route. They were shocked to see the front door ajar with no lights on, so the Marshalls pulled into the parking lot. When they got out of their car, they heard the store's burglar alarm blaring away inside. Fearing that there was a robbery and that Eddie may be in trouble, the Marshalls ran into the service station and turned on the lights. Eddie was wandering around the store, dazed and confused. They asked if he was okay. It's reported that he said he had fallen on the railroad tracks on his way to work and hit his head. Richard said that he saw blood on Eddie's face and that he was holding what he thought was a cleaning rag on the back of his head. Which, one thing that stood out to me during this entire interaction was that Eddie didn't seem to notice the burglar alarm was going off. They said that Eddie looked stunned, and the closer they got, the more clear it became that he sustained a serious wound to his head. Richard observed Eddie's ball cap laying on the store counter, and noticed that it too was damp with blood. He insisted that Eddie come with him and his wife, and they would take him to the hospital. The Marshalls recalled that Eddie remained conscious through the drive from Kincaid to the Plateau Medical Center in Oak Hill, which is a 13-minute drive. He talked with them but never elaborated on what or who caused his injuries. At the hospital, it did not take long for them to conclude that Eddie had not fallen or tripped. They said that he had been beaten up. The hospital got in contact with Eddie's brothers, Howard and Glenn, as well as the Fayette County Sheriff's Department. Deputies responded to the service station not too long after receiving the call. At first, it appeared that it was an all-too-common occurrence. Basically, your run-of-the-mill hold-up or robbery followed by an attack. Aside from the blood and the alarm, nothing seemed to be out of place at the service station. There was no sign of a struggle inside or outside.
Hey y'all, I'm Dan, and I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia, artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
While Eddie clung to life, authorities started backtracking his movements. He was known to carry two flashlights with him each morning when he walked to work. One was found at the service station. Later that morning, two of his neighbors contacted the sheriff's department and said that they found his second flashlight lying on the ground about 75 feet away from his home. The lens of the flashlight was cracked, like it had been dropped, and it was lying along what would have been Eddie's normal walking path. Throughout the day, other clues gradually came to light. An x-ray of the back of his head revealed the true extent of his injuries. He had been struck from behind, not once, but four times with a blunt object. When his brother Howard viewed the x-ray, he said that the back of his skull looked like a road map. A close examination of his clothing gave deputies more information. Eddie was known to carry $500 and a medical card in the right pocket of his work shirt. Both were missing, but $176 belonging to the service station, along with a tire gauge, pen, and paper, were found untouched in his other pocket. The front of his pants were scuffed and had gravel embedded in them. It made deputies look at his knees, and they found that they were badly bruised. To me, the biggest clue of all wasn't made public until 2007. When the marshals first came upon Eddie at the service station, he was holding what appeared to be a brown rag. However, it turned out to be a small patterned silk blouse. And I couldn't help but think, why would he have a blouse? And it's never been explained. I spiraled on this and I couldn't find anything on it. According to the store owner, the blouse was not present at the station when it closed the night before the attack. Authorities concluded that Eddie had more than likely been assaulted from behind not too long after leaving his home. It's believed that he was struck in the head, which caused him to fall on his knees on a gravel surface. At the time, there was no gravel in the area around the service station. His assailant or assailants were more than likely familiar with Eddie's habits and searched his right pocket and removed the $500 as well as the medical card. And this honestly made authorities question everything. Authorities estimated that he was assaulted at or a little after 2 a.m., the time he normally left his home. They feel like the assault took place near the location his flashlight was found, about 75 feet away from his home. Yet, the driver who saw Eddie unlocking the door to the service station was quite certain that the time was right at 2:39 a.m., just over 30 minutes after the authorities believed that he was attacked. If both times are correct, or even just close, how is it that Eddie, who sustained a major head injury as a result of an attack, managed to walk the distance from his home to the service station? They did question if it happened somewhere else on his way to work. And I mean, if he was attacked somewhere else, why was his flashlight found near his home? Eddie was known to sometimes catch a ride with people, so could he have been driven there? I mean, that's another possibility. Do I see that happening? Not really. I mean, for him to be driven to work, be dropped off, the person driving who saw him unlocking the door didn't mention a vehicle anywhere else. So, if he was, why would Eddie be startled by lights? Why would Eddie be startled by headlights if he was already in a vehicle? Although he was 72 years old, Eddie was in what you would call good physical health. And being 6 feet tall and 250 pounds, a lot of people felt like he could have held his own in a fight. That throws out the possibility, could he have been taken over by several people? Authorities did think that if it was the case, it would explain the silk blouse. And they feel that if it was possible, that those who attacked Eddie may have been accompanied, willingly or unwillingly, by an unidentified female who could have offered her blouse to Eddie in a form of pity. Rumors started going around about what happened to Eddie, and I mean, they spread quickly through the small community. Some said that a well-known convicted felon with a history of assault and robbery was to blame. Others said that the killer was someone who Eddie had once helped financially, but he later refused to help anymore. His family said that there were almost as many rumors as to what happened to him as there were residents in Kincaid. However, at each turn, informants or potential witnesses seemed to step back after a fear of retribution or a desire to remain out of the headlines.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe
and watch for deer.
Although he survived the initial attack and his condition was reported as stable, he was never able to recall what happened on the morning of his attack. Sadly, his condition did not improve. Dewey Edward Brown passed away in Beckley on Thursday, February 20th, 1992. He was buried in the Kincaid Cemetery. His sister Ola passed away in 2015, his brother Howard in 2017, and Glenn in 2018. The home where Eddie and Ola lived has since burned down. It's been 34 years since the murder of Eddie Brown. If you have any information on the murder of Eddie Brown, please contact the Fayette County Sheriff's Department at 304-574-4126 or Crime Stoppers of West Virginia at 304-255-7876. We'll be off next week, but don't worry, we'll be back the following week with a new case. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find a good West Virginia true crime podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Mountain State Mysteries. Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com. For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.